snow likely before noon is 100% correct. It's blustery out there. It's very blustery out. No, you're not mishearing. You're not misunderstanding, or you're not mishearing. It is actually me, Nick McNamara. I'm back in studio after a long break from the K-Man Morning Show. Don't adjust your or adjust your Arbitron diaries or anything like that. You're still listening to K-Man. We're here, and Brandon is out sick for the morning, and we're hoping he gets better very soon. I had the same thing he went through. It's very rough. I'm going to tell you that. So we're going to talk a little bit later with some folks from the group trying to save the Pottawatomie County Courthouse. But before we get into that, in studio with me from the Kansas State College of Veterinary Medicine, we have the section head of equine internal medicine, Dr. Lori Beard. Hello.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
Of course. Thanks for coming out. And you said you've been in here a few times, but for those who maybe haven't heard you come in the studio or haven't heard any of your interviews, talk a little bit about yourself. How long have you been with K-State Vet Med, and what got you into veterinary medicine?
So I've been here since 2004, so I guess 15 years now. How did I get interested in veterinary medicine? I think a lot of us knew growing up we wanted to be a veterinarian. My father was a veterinarian, so kind of grew up knowing that's what I wanted to do.
And you have a specific focus in horses, or is it in general you have a general veterinary practice?
So after veterinary school, what I did is some post-DVM training. I went on to do an internship and a residency, and my focus or specialty is in equine internal medicine.
Okay. And luckily, it's a good segue. We're talking about Brandon having an infectious disease himself, and with your expertise in equine internal medicine, we're going to be talking about some infectious diseases that impact horses specifically. And as we were talking before, but we got on air, there's been a bit of an outbreak that's been affecting horses in 8 different states.
Yeah, so it's a disease called vesicular stomatitis, or VS. You might see it abbreviated. It causes ulcers in horses' mouths and on coronary bands. And yes, it started this summer down southwest, moved its way up to Colorado. And about 3 weeks ago, we had 3 horses affected in a county right next to Colorado.
And you said it started down southwest. What causes it? How does it first manifest in horses?
Good question. So it's a disease that's transmitted by flies. We don't exactly know where it overwinters, like in what mammal population it lives in, because it's got to live someplace mm-hmm. in the winter. But then it pops up usually in the summer and fall, and then again spread by insects.
And as you said, it spread throughout 8 different states. Is it a very fast-moving disease when it does end up popping up, or is this kind of abnormal for the disease?
Really good question on that. I think it can be spread by direct contact. So if you had a large number of horses with clinical signs, it'd be pretty easy to spread it. Certainly, it does seem like the spread was kind of slow this summer, but persistent.
Okay, slow but persistent. So not really super abnormal to see this amount of activity on it.
No, I mean, the last outbreak was 2015, but I think this is a disease we're going to have to be aware of, and that it will impact us when we get horses affected.
And what are some signs? You mentioned a few, but what are the overall clinical signs that you notice when you come into contact with a horse that has vesicular stomatitis?
Probably the biggest thing, you might see some drooling. And then if you were to open the horse's mouth, you would see ulcers on his lips, maybe gums, and you'd even notice some lesions on maybe the feet.
I see here, I have a bit of a fact sheet in front of me to kind of help me out here. They mentioned a little bit of pain, discomfort, and reluctance to eat or drink. Could this be something that manifests in horses? I know you mentioned that there's a potential for it to impact cattle as well.
Yeah, and so that's the biggest issue, right? If you're going to have ulcers in your mouth, you're not going to want to eat. And if this gets into cattle and, you know, large herds or milking herds, you're going to have a decreased weight gain, decreased milk production. And that's why the disease is considered reportable. It can cause problems in livestock. It also looks very similar to an exotic foreign disease called foot and mouth.
Okay. And I'm familiar with that. Not that I've had it, but I'm definitely familiar with that. So those out there who aren't super familiar with that type of disease, that might be a good way to sort of conceptualize it for themselves. If you're noticing anything that looks like that, maybe you should take a little bit more care and check it out a little more closely.
Correct. And I mentioned that this was a reportable disease. The disease in horses itself is not a big deal. The horses, you know, get over it. They're fine. But because it's reportable and we're trying to limit its spread, for instance, when we had horses in Kansas that came up positive, that might impact the ability of a horse owner or livestock owner to take their animals to a different state. And so when we move animals across state lines, there's something called a health certificate that we need to get. And so it's very important for veterinarians, horse, livestock, or horse owners to call that state that they're wanting to go for, through and find out, hey, can we bring our animals in? Are there any additional requirements? Canada, to my knowledge, was restricting importation of horses for at least 30 days after we had our positive horse.
And what are some of the, maybe the reasons that folks would be moving their horses across state lines? What sort of commercial impact does this have?
So the biggest thing for horses, right, people like to compete with horses are the biggest thing. And so going to horse shows or maybe a trail riding up in the mountains, just enjoyment. So, you know, people have horses to enjoy them and move them around. And so it does have an impact on us in those ways. And I do anticipate that we might have more outbreaks, you know, in the future years.
And you mentioned it also has an impact on cattle, and that's also a pretty – it has a potential for economic impact as well.
Correct. That would have a big economic impact.
Yeah, decreased weight, especially if it's a beef cattle, that's a big problem. And then decreased milk production, I think that says it all right there.
Yeah, absolutely. In dairies, that would be a huge, huge problem.
And you also talked a little bit about its ability to impact humans with me off air. As I understand, it does have the potential to spread to people. Is it you mentioned it's not really serious in horses. If it does spread to people, what are some of the ways that happens? And is it a similar level of maybe just it's not too much to worry about, it'll go away over time?
Yeah, in humans, I don't think it causes ulcers. I think it says flu-like symptoms. I don't believe it's of a huge concern, but certainly if you're going to looking at a horse that's drooling, probably wearing gloves would be an ideal thing to do, or at least washing your hands if you're dealing with, you know, animals that are affected by this.
You know, Brandon's having a bit of flu-like symptoms, but I don't think he's handled any horses lately, so I think he's good on the VS side of things, but either way, I'm hoping he gets better from his flu in general. And so if you do come across a horse with this, of course, there's reporting. You have to report it if you're going across state lines. But what's some recommended actions you can take to maybe mitigate it? I know you say it'll just get over it over time.
Yeah. So the first thing, just back to reportable disease. So if I see an animal in Kansas that looks like he has clinical signs of vesicular stomatitis, I need to call my state veterinarian's office, and they take it from there. Mm-hmm. As far as treatment, usually what we do is, you know, one is isolate that horse, try to prevent as much spread. Maybe there's going to be something done as far as insect control to try to, again, prevent spread. As far as treatment is probably pretty simple, probably some anti-inflammatories, maybe antibiotics if we thought that there was any secondary bacterial infections associated with that, but usually just some nursing care.
So it sort of has the potential for maybe some secondary infections to prop up with it then?
Potentially. I don't think anything of super concern. But again, I would think just keeping that animal comfortable and isolated, maybe some soft foods if they're having a hard time eating. But I would think in a week to two that the disease is going to resolve.
I mean, it makes sense having open sores in your mouth. There's a potential for infection there.
For sure.
And all right, I guess so that's something to keep an eye out. And there is some information on it on the USDA APHIS website. There's a bit of a fact sheet there. So if you go out and Google that, you can get yourself educated a little bit more on some of the signs and symptoms to look out for. And you mentioned it's sort of been a recurring thing. It pops up every few years here and there, and you see the potential for it to come again. Is it just the proximity of animals that makes it so so recurrent?
A really good question. So we don't know where the virus essentially overwinters. Is it in another group of mammals, sometimes birds, those sort of things? It does seem like there's a reservoir. And so it does seem reasonable to expect, if we have the right weather conditions in regards to insect populations, that we'll probably see it again.
Now, a reservoir, you mean by that, you mean sort of a group where they're just sort of a group of animals or even group of horses where it kind of hangs on as like a little bit, possibly as a carrier, some carriers maybe hang on with it, or is there a specific species that maybe just holds it within them and it doesn't have the same impact on them physically?
A really good question. So viruses can't live outside of the body. Mm-hmm. So they have to live in some sort of cell, and so they have to be living in a live animal. And so usually a reservoir is an animal that maybe the virus doesn't cause a lot of disease in, or not a severe disease. And then in the winter, we don't see any new horse cases because there's no insects, but the virus still is alive and well in a certain animal. Again, we don't know what that animal would be. And then when the insects get going again in the summer and they then bite or can transmit the disease from the reservoir, whatever that animal is, to horses, then the disease starts, you know, resulting in larger outbreaks.
While it's not maybe the most serious equine disease out there, I'm sure there's quite a bit of research going into finding out exactly what that reservoir is. Is that a fair assumption?
I think that's a fair assumption. Certainly this disease has, again, economic impacts. And so trying to control it, right now there is not a vaccine for it. I mean, so that would be another thought. Maybe development of a vaccine would be helpful too.
All right. And I think it's about time for our first break of the morning. Stay tuned. We'll be back more with Dr. Lori Beard from the KSU College of Veterinary Medicine. Stay tuned. You're listening to In Focus, News Radio KMAN.